Yeah, well, probably I try to do the executive summary of our last meeting, and Michael, if you want to add something, you are absolutely free to do so. So what items do we have on the current agenda? And, well, we first of all discussed IRS 12, accounting for uncertain tax position, and the outcome was that the scope of this project should not only be limited to current income tax but also to deferred tax, so that the issue is would be a little bit broader because more or less you have some linkages. Then there was a discussion on, well, it's only about measurement. It's not whether you are in IRS 12 or in IRS 37, which was the original question. We had an issue with regard when we apply a certain measurement attitude, would we expect to have some disclosures? The outcome there was, well, first of all, there should be a close view to IRS 1, whether IRS 1 is not sufficient, probably. In addition, we have a certain awareness that it might be a little bit challenging for the Interpretation Committee to add additional disclosures, which not have been in the standard before. But it is not yet absolutely clear whether we do not require for some additional disclosures.
I think we're what we'll be doing is reminding people about the general disclosure requirements in IS1, and so therefore pointing them to that, particularly with regards to disclosures relating to uncertainties.
Currently there's the tendency that this accounting standard has to be applied prospectively, because sometimes it might otherwise be challenging to have an idea what would have been in the past. Next topic is IRS 16, the question on accounting for proceeds and cost of testing. As already mentioned, probably the issue was a little bit broader before. Now it is absolutely reduced to testing. What is testing? Because testing is reflected in the exact wording of IRS 16 in standard. The staff will do some additional outreach. What probably means testing within different industries, and then with the knowledge of this outreach, we will decide further how we intend to go on with this issue. Next topic was IRS 21, and I guess for each and every industry the quite interesting question what exchange rate would apply what is the date of transaction for the purpose of identifying the applicable exchange rate for revenue recognition. An example, you get an advance payment, whereas the continuing service, so to say, to earn this revenue is over time. So is the exchange rate the exchange rate at the point in time you provide this service in subsequent stages, so to say, or is it the point in time when you get the advance payment? It became obvious that only looking at revenue recognition would probably a little bit too narrow, because the problem arises also in other areas out of revenue recognition, could be IRS 20 or what else. So therefore it was decided that overall this issue, which is intended to become an interpretation, should have a broader scope. The tendency is to use the exchange rate when the advance payment is received. For more complex situations, for example, when you get payments in stages, so to say, this is still under consideration. But we will come back to this topic in our next meeting, or one meeting ahead of the next meeting. Then we discussed IS-32. The issue is what is the classification of the liability for prepaid cards issued by a bank in the bank's financial statements. The interesting issue here is that the bank more or less is not responsible for contributing any service or any goods or so, but the bank has the liability to pay these to the store or whoever provides this service or good. And here it was a clear view of the committee that for sure this is a financial liability. However, to avoid unintended consequences, as customer loyalty programs and customer loyalty cards have a broader focus, it was decided that the staff will continue to do some outreach, what probably could be the impact for other say payment card programs out of, for example, outside the banking industry. So a good common example would be airlines, and the airline could also make use of a kind of agent, and this agent then is providing goods or services, and the airline is just settling more or less their obligation by paying money. So then if this would also end up within a financial instrument, then this could have an impact on all these kind of programs. And to avoid any unintended consequences, it was decided to do some further outreach. Topics probably to have on a narrow scope amendment. We had only one topic related to this, where the interpretation committee decided that a narrow scope amendment would probably be the best solution to fix this issue. And the question here is if there's property under construction. Could this property under construction, if it is originally classified as inventory, be classified as investment property, which would have for sure a consequence on measurement. This currently would not be allowed by IS-40 according to the rules. However, as IS-40 was changed in previous year for finalized property, that you could do this change, probably it was an unintended consequence that this more or less was, forgotten, or it was not explicitly addressed. And there is some logic that you should be allowed to do so if you really have more or less a kind of, definite management decision that this will be changed. So you have at least to have a kind of clear evidence that you are out of inventory in investment property. And if this decision then is given and obvious and could be documented, then it would make sense to allow this reclassification, so to say. And therefore, here it is intended to have a narrow scope amendment.
The idea was to permit it going from cost to fair value, but not backwards, and say, finally, this program is not successful, let's take it back to inventory. The idea was to say, no, cannot go backwards.
So that was something for narrow scope amendment. Final agenda decisions were raised on the following topics. One was IFRIC 21, levies raised on property, plant, and equipment. The question was whether this levy could be in a way capitalized or so. The answer is that IFRIC 21 is an interpretation of IRIS 37, which does not deal with capitalization or so. So therefore, there will be no answer given by the interpretation committee on this specific issue. Next topic, also final agenda decision, and I have to stress this here. This is on financial instruments with negative interest yields, where the final decision was given that this could not be within the net interest income line, so to say, for the banking industry, as IRS 18 would not allow for that. And it was decided that no further comment period or so should be necessary, as the topic was already as there was already a debate and commenting period on this topic a while ago. So therefore, this final agenda decision was given.
So just to clarify that, because my understanding was that what will be, and I don't have the draft update, obviously, but from hearing, listening to the committee, I thought that the decision at the end of the day, and maybe I misunderstood what you just said, is that you cannot deduct it from interest income, but it could be part of net interest income or expense or margin or whatever you want to call it, and there will be no comment on interest expense. I think there was something on interest expense before. Could you put it into it? So it's just clarification, it cannot be deducted from interest income, full stop.
It's my recollection, and yes, that it is part of the net interest margin somewhere above the line, and probably on a separate line, because as it cannot be offset against interest income, and because it is not clear whether it is interest expense when you receive a negative income on your loan to someone, could you say it is interest expense because you don't borrow money, so this the committee doesn't say anything about it. But still, I think it is intended to say that it would be somewhere above the line of net interest margin, which implies in a way a separate line, kind of.
Okay.
I'm not very happy with this decision. We have more interest income from the liability side and no income expenses on the asset side as a bank. But still, for us, it's part of the interest because this is the business we do. We have assets to earn interest income and liabilities to pay against them, and in overall view, we have, it's like an accident to have to change the side. But that's not enough reason to divide it, and also for us the arguments are not very clear that this should be a fee for more safety or so on. That's not our view on this.
So why the committee did not ask for that expense to be classified as an operating expense. If it was a fee for custody or an insurance policy you pay for something, it would be classified as operating expense, and that the committee recognized. It's not that kind of thing. It is linked to some interest component, but it just said you cannot call it negative income because there is no notion of negative income. That's what the committee says.
So in terms of the specifics, it was only the case where you've got an asset that has a negative interest rate that gives rise to a charge in the income statement. That was the specific circumstance where they said that couldn't be classified as interest income, interest revenue, because of it not meeting the definition of revenue under IRS 18. So it's where you've got that expense on an asset that can't be interest revenue. They didn't go to other situations where you've got liabilities giving you net a net income because of a negative interest rate. They didn't specifically comment on that in the agenda decision.
I guess I understand that, but I hope it helps the banks that it's part of the net interest margin. On the liability side, I understand that the committee said that there was not a question asked, and we are not giving an answer to that. But if I read the arguments for saying it's not revenue because of these and these and these reasons, I can't see that somebody says if a liability you get money on that this is an expense. I mean, it would be really hard for me to come up with an argument for that, saying that it cannot be interest income because it's not revenue or so. But that's another issue. But
and in practice, there are still small amounts, and I would prefer to keep it in the interest income and expense, net interest income, and show the amount differentiated in the notes somewhere to give more transparency on this phenomenon.
It's probably a question of materiality. I mean. Yeah. If it is not material, you can offset and no one will ask any question. And you don't even have to disclose it. And if it becomes material enough so that this interest income amount doesn't make any sense when compared to the asset that you have, or if you have interest expense that has no relationship with your liabilities, then it becomes more important to explain what are the components of this amount that you have in revenue or expense because it has no meaning. So, and then you have probably to have some separation in the notes, or if more material on the balance on the P&L itself.
I personally was probably a little bit too forward-looking, as I also said that we probably should comment on IFRS 15 with regard to this issue, because more or less IFRS 18 is lifetime is limited. But then for sure we probably would have to open it for commenting, and this might not have been the intention. Probably this was a kind of fast track, so to say, fast decision on this issue. Now it is clear, at least under IRS 18.
Can I just, it was not on the IFRS agenda, but I think 2 days ago I saw an article in the newspaper that there is for the first time also now a corporate bond, I think it was a Swiss company, with negative interest. Hopefully we will not have a negative interest under IAS 19. It would be interesting to see.
Yeah, interest rate under IAS 19 is anyhow interesting topic. Not only with regard to what kind of bond portfolio do I use, but also with regard to the extrapolation, how do I do my regressions and so on. The next topic we came up with a final decision was this on IRS 39. You are all aware of this. That was a very specific topic on embedded foreign currency derivatives for a very specific industry, for the movie industry. And here we said, no, we set principles and we do not intend to give any further guidance because we believe this standard is clear on this, and with regard to this, I absolutely agree on this decision. Next topics are on IFRS 12, I do not need to summarize it all up, because these are the two topics with regard to non-controlling interest for subsidiary of non-controlling interest or for joint joint ventures, joint operations, and we have discussed the topics here back and forth, and we have also sent a comment letter, and the decision is as it was tentative, thus there is no change to the tentative decision. I guess we commented that we probably should amend the standard to have a little bit more clearance on it. If I would be a standard setter, I could follow this view, your view, Guido, if I would come. So in a way, if you see, and that's my personal view, that it takes, well, a few pages to explain why, what, and so on, it seems to be a more challenging topic. Next topic, IFRS 13, we have already discussed in detail this morning. Thus, no comment on this. That was also a final decision. And then we only had one, we had a further 10. Yeah,
so without any changes to the wording, so the wording of the tentative agenda decision is the same thing but in the final
Does
one?
The IFRS 12.
13.
We are IFRS 13.
13.
That was the
level 1.
Level 1, 2, 3 issue.
It's not finally published, so I don't know what Michael is.
It should be this morning. And it should have been published, or should be being published this morning. And I can't remember if there was any change. If there was, it was pretty minor. But I'm afraid I don't have a track changes version, and I don't remember if there was any detailed changes.
But anyhow, it's a final decision, Peter, so
check whether it's
so no chance to comment at all. Tentative agenda decisions. One is on IS 24 related party disclosures. There was a question, well, what is the definition of close members of the family? Is father included or not? The father.
Just for sort of clarity's sake, do we want to pick that up, or I don't think so, but just for clarity's sake, do you want to write a comment letter on that tentative agenda decision? I don't see any wild reaction.
Probably let me finalize what we have decided.
Does it refer to parents or only to father? Then I would comment on it. Because what I've heard is that in the UK you can have three parents now.
It is.
And maybe we should.
No, it is. Guido, you are right. It is parents, not the father. But probably the father was the one who... triggered the issue. We said principle based. We believe that the standard is clear. That also parents, father, mother, or what else could be included if there are material related party transactions. Work in progress is on IAS 28, and the question for investments in associates and joint ventures, specifically the assessment of significant influence for fund manager acting as agent and holding own investment in the fund. And this, as for specifically as we have had a critical debate on how is IAS 28 impacted by the issuance of IFRS 10 with regard to control. There is some guidance saying that it was not intended to change significant influence in IRS 28 while issuing IFRS 10 and the other kind of control principle. However, for sure, if control is defined a little bit different, then this could also have an impact of significant influence. So therefore, this topic is still open, and there is no final conclusion on this issue.
And I think that we send a comment letter on
right,
this.
Right, exactly. In arguing for this, that because originally on the last discussion, tentative, it was decided no, that it should be a non-interpretation, because we believe there is. This is a non-issue at all.
Mm. Well, the other issue I think we addressed was not only whether it should be a IFRIC or an IFRIC or whatever, was that our concern was that the wording, the tentative agenda decision wording, seemed to imply that you don't have to look at agent principle
relationships under IAS 28. So because that's only mentioned specifically in IFRS 10. And 28, it doesn't say anything, and it seems to say the gender decision doesn't really matter whether you are an agent under 28 or not. And that was maybe that was a wrong reading of what you're trying to say, but that was our concern, because I think what we have said here is that in practice, people also in 28 look at agent-principal relationships in order to say, do you have significant influence or not? And that was one of our main concerns.
Because in our IFRIC update, as Martin said, that we've parked this for now. We do say, however, that the committee members did not reach agreement on whether and how a power to participate in financial operating policy decisions that is held in the capacity of an agent should affect the significant influence assessment. So the committee couldn't reach agreement on that, but what it's decided to do is to just park it for now. Let's see what happens with the equity accounting project. If it gets picked up by that, great. If it doesn't, then I think this will be coming back to the committee to reconsider.
I think that that's okay, because my sense is that out there in the practice there is no diversity, because my sense is that everybody who looks at 28, not only in this specific circumstances, thinks about agent-principal relationships. So
that imply that if you have 20% but you are having that as an agent for your investors, you consider you don't have significant influence. That's current practice.
Yes.
Which for me makes sense. It's very using common sense, but...
Okay. Schmidt, did I miss anything? I guess probably here, as for us as a committee, we now have to decide whether we intend to send any comments on this investment property issue or with regard to the related party disclosures. And as I understand... So far, we agree with the tentative decisions taken in London. That could also be a positive comment we sent, but we do not need to spend exhaustive resources in drafting additional wording on that. We could probably just send a positive signal and say, okay, support. If my committee members share my view.
So the only two tentative agenda decisions are the change within IAS 40 and then the parent.
Actually, the IAS 40 one wasn't a tentative agenda decision. It's a proposal to the board to amend the standard.
Yeah.
The only one is the one on IAS 24.
Yeah.
We've never kept necessary from commenting on questions not answered, asked. So my conclusion would be that we, for once, do not write a comment letter. Okay? But you do note our agreement. Well, would that lead to the lunch break? And thank you very much for coming here, and you're welcome to stay for the lunch, of course, and hope to see you again as the committee. Not me. But anyway, Mittagspause bis Viertel vor.
Yeah.